This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, more GOP presidential delegates were divvied out this week. Managing editor for Red State, Leon Wolf, is here on why he says it's time for conservatives to coalesce around a single candidate. And Christians in the Middle East continue to be persecuted by ISIS. Why won't the Obama administration label what is happening as genocide? New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith joins me with that answer. Also, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was asked if she would step down if she is indicted for improperly handling classified information. She dismissed the question, saying it's not going to happen. Is she overconfident? Florida Representative Ron DeSantis is here with more. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's guest, our topics. You can also sign up for my daily update and our alerts that come to you Monday through Friday right there in your email inbox. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com, a lot of resources there for you, including, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but for those of you that are heading to the polls this coming week, we have a presidential voter guide that tells you where the candidates stand on about a dozen important issues. Download it, take it to church with you, share it with your Sunday school class, pass it out, share it far and wide. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me. In fact, you can get my daily Bible study. Yes, I tweet out a little scripture verse every day with a little thought to begin your day with. That's at T. Perkins if you're on Twitter. All right, this past week, more GOP delegates were up for grabs. Now, here's the current delegate count after this past weekend. Donald Trump leading with 458 delegates, Senator Ted Cruz with 359, Senator Marco Rubio at 151, and Governor John Kasich at 54. Now, polls going into last weekend showed that Donald Trump was most likely going to win all four states that were up for grabs last Saturday. But Senator Cruz was able to take both Maine and Kansas, while garnering actually the same amount of delegates in my home state of Louisiana. Now, the next big contest is coming this Tuesday. This is what I was warning you about. Make sure you're ready. This coming Tuesday, Ohio, Florida, Illinois, Missouri, and North Carolina. Voters in all of those states head to the polls in the presidential primary on the Republican primary. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com, will give you all the information you need to help make an informed choice as to who to support in this presidential election. All right. There are some, though, that are saying it's time for conservatives to unite. One of those is the managing editor for Red State, Leon Wolf, and he joined me earlier in the week to explain why. Leon, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on the program.
All right. You are proposing, after Saturday's results, which caught a lot of people by surprise, that it's time to unite behind a particular candidate. Who is that candidate and why?
I think that really, if you value at all the idea that Donald Trump should not be the Republican nominee for president, that it's probably time for everybody to get behind Ted Cruz. And I think that the answer really can be found in a couple of different things. Number one is that
Leon, let me stop you there for just a moment, because previously Red State, had you not called on people to unite behind Rubio?
I had. And a couple of weeks ago, I looked at, you know, the math, in particular the exit polling of the first four races, and concluded that Rubio was probably the better guy to take on Trump. And the reason for that is fairly simple, and it is that Cruz, at least up until that point, had really only experienced success with voters who identified as either evangelical Christian or very conservative. And in all other categories, he lost to Donald Trump heads up, and in fact also lost to Marco Rubio. And my point was is that once you get beyond Super Tuesday, if you look at the math, if you look at the math, you know, what Cruz basically needed, if his current exit polling had continued, at least what he had seen in the first four races, he needed states that only had 60% of voters who were either evangelical or very conservative in order to have a reasonable shot at beating Donald Trump. And there just weren't many of those states left on the map after Super Tuesday. What we saw on Saturday was a couple of different factors that really changed that equation. Number one, of course, we had the surprise win in Maine, which was something that almost no one was predicting or saw. We saw him increase his strength with other categories of voters in both Kansas and Louisiana and Kentucky. So that's number two. And number three, we also saw it's not so much the strength of Cruz, although that was surprising and pleasantly surprising if you're a Cruz fan. It was the weakness of Rubio in a lot of those categories. A lot of the categories where he was previously showing strength, he seems to have really collapsed a lot in his support. And so really, if you look at it right now, both in terms of the delegate math, it becomes almost impossible for Rubio to win going forward, even if he wins Florida. But also, it kind of illustrates that more or less you can see the Rubio campaign collapsing a little bit going forward and not really fulfilling the promise that they had earlier on in the campaign season.
So, Leon, what changed? What's the dynamic that took place here that changed these voting patterns of people in the various states?
I think there's a number of factors. I think, for one thing, Rubio has not been on the air as much, and I think that one of the consequences, or one of the reasons for that, rather, is that he is running lower on money. I believe that he spent less than $1 million on Super Tuesday advertising altogether, whereas Cruz spent substantially more in national advertising on that day and leading up to that day, which could have helped his exposure. But I think the more salient thing is that, you know, Rubio, I think, may have done the country as a whole a favor in terms of basically exposing Donald Trump's vanity. I think that that's his one weak point, is that if you pick at his personal vanity, he comes unraveled in a way that he doesn't when you pick at his, you know, past support for liberal candidates or his flexibility on positions. And I think that Rubio really did Ted Cruz a favor by doing that and by going after him in a very direct and quite frankly, at times vulgar way. But I don't think that he, in the process, did himself any favors.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. He may have exposed Donald Trump, but in the process, he kind of took himself out, did he not?
Yeah, that's kind of the same thing that happened to Chris Christie in New Hampshire. You remember that Chris Christie's goal in New Hampshire was to take out Marco Rubio, which he did in that debate by being, you know, very direct and kind of a jerk with him, as a matter of fact. But while Christie may have succeeded in knocking Rubio down several pegs, he did not succeed in helping himself and, in fact, probably hurt himself. And so the voters, while negative advertising works in a sense in terms of bringing candidates down, it also has somewhat of a negative effect on the person who launches the negative ad as a negative campaign. And I think that that's to a large degree what's happened with Rubio. It's allowed Cruz to be the kind of adult in the conversation, and you saw that dynamic play out at the debate last Thursday night as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a suicide bomber. It doesn't work out so well for the bomber. I mean, that's
right.
In effect, I think it has exposed, but it also, you're absolutely right. I think it turned people away from Rubio, and his performance, I think, declined as a result of getting kind of in the gutter in this spat with Donald Trump. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Leon Wolf, my guest. He is the managing editor of Red State. So, Leon, when you talk about Marco Rubio stepping out of the race and conservatives unifying behind Ted Cruz, there has been an announcement that there are at least four senators now that are going to endorse Ted Cruz this week at some point. I don't know what time that will be announced, but that's a pretty significant shift in that most of the senators had stepped back and now they're stepping forward. It does appear that the momentum could be toward rallying around Senator Cruz.
Yeah, and I think that you know, the importance of that really cannot be overstated because, you know, Ted Cruz's whole, you know, shtick, and I don't mean to imply that it's insincere, but his whole basic rise to stardom in the conservative movement has been from the fact that since the day he set foot in the Senate, he has been poking his fellow Republican senators in the eye and not allowing them to essentially get away with a lot of the shenanigans that they had in the past of really pretending to be on the side of conservatives, but not. So, you know, to see that his colleagues, and I think that Donald Trump is right, that he is not particularly well-liked in the Senate by a lot of the people who are in the Senate, to see them rally around him would be a very monumental thing, if only to illustrate the degree to which people really are still resistant to the idea of President Trump. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way that the Republican race has gone in the past, at this point, if any previous race, it's already been over. By the time Super Tuesday's over, it's over.
Right.
And we pretty much get to the point where we accept whoever wins Super Tuesday is going to be the nominee. Let's all collect together and move on. The fact that we still have a live race at this point indicates that Trump faces a more serious and sincere resistance than any Republican frontrunner has to this point. And Senator Gittingham Cruz Camp really enforces that.
Again, that was the managing editor for Red State, Leon Wolf. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be joined by one of my good friends, New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith, a champion for the unborn and for religious freedom and human rights. He's going to be talking to us about a speech he made this past week on the issue of the persecuted church, as well as why the administration will not call what's happening in the Middle East what it is, genocide. That's coming up on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the President nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the President has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along this weekend. The website, tonyperkins.com, be sure and visit that. Have a lot of information right there on the website for you. Have the voter guide, presidential voter guide, will help you better understand where the candidates stand on about 12 fundamental issues. And again, you got voters in several states coming up, Ohio, Florida, Illinois, Missouri, and North Carolina. You're going to the polls this week, so I hope you participate and vote your biblical values. All right, one of the things I talk about a lot because I think it's fundamentally important, the issue of religious freedom, and related to that, the persecution of Christians around the world. And in particular, we've been talking for the last 6 months or longer how this administration is reluctant to call what's happening in Iraq and Syria for what it is, genocide, the systematic killing of Christians in an attempt to eradicate them. Well, earlier this week, New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith made a speech on the persecuted church, and he's been a champion on this issue, and he joined me earlier in the week to talk about why the administration has yet to call what's happening in the Middle East, again, what it is, genocide. Here's that interview. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you very much. It's great to be on again.
Well, earlier this week, thanks. I appreciate that, and thank you for being here. Yesterday, you spoke at an event in North Carolina focused on the persecution of Christians. What's happening to Christians abroad right now?
Well, there has been a systematic genocide being committed against Christians, particularly in Syria and Iraq. It's been ongoing. It's gone on, like you said in your opening, for quite some time, and as far back as 3 years ago, with the rise of ISIS, I held a hearing, and it became then a series of hearings to press the administration to declare what ISIS is doing as a genocide. And if you look at the Genocide Convention, it couldn't be clearer that this is a systematic effort to destroy, and the way the Article 2 of the Genocide Convention reads, genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethical, racial, or religious group, by killing members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, causing serious bodily or mental harm. We're seeing Christians being crucified, beheaded, Christian women being raped, being told if they don't convert to Islam, they will be annihilated, exterminated. And we've been calling on the administration for years to declare this to be a genocide and to hold to account through tribunals, and I have a bill that will be on the floor very shortly, to establish a Syrian war crimes tribunal like we had in Rwanda, Sierra Leone, and in the former Yugoslavia. And yesterday, Congressman Robert Pittenger held an extremely important conference on the persecuted church and on persecuted believers worldwide, including in the Middle East, but also in China, North Korea, and in many other parts of the world, in Nigeria, under the gun of Boko Haram. And it was a very, very good conference. Frank Wolf spoke as well, as did Robert Pittenger. So, it was, you know, we're asking the administration just do what ought to be self-evident. And I did ask Secretary Kerry that the other day. He says he's looking at it, like you said. This reminds me of Darfur, Rwanda, where there was a reluctance, as well as in Bosnia, to declare this extermination campaign, to call it what it is, and that's a genocide.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, my guest. We're talking about the issue of the persecution of Christians abroad. And Chris, you have been championing this issue, the life issue, many of these issues in Congress now for really for over three decades. I want to ask you this from a standpoint of that frame of reference, going back to President Ronald Reagan. Where would you put this? Have you seen this scale of persecution during your time in Congress?
Well, we know that the Soviets and, of course, the communist Chinese, and that continues to this day, has systematically destroyed Christians, believers. But the Soviet Union is gone. The Warsaw Pact nations are gone. And so this is a new horrific manifestation, this time by radical Islamists, and this administration won't even call them radical Islamists. And we've also seen a gross deterioration in China, where the persecuted church over the decades, even those denominations that have agreed to government surveillance and to be part of the government system, they too are being targeted by President Xi Jinping, the president of China. So there's like a wholesale, exponential, you know, doubling down on eradicating the world of Christians. And in the Western world, really, and I said this yesterday, following Solzhenitsyn's warnings, you know, the great Russian Nobel laureate for literature and great Christian, he spoke at both, you know, wrote many essays, but also spoke at Harvard in the late 1970s, and then gave this unbelievable 1983 Templeton Awards statement in which he said, whether it be Marxism or secular humanism, they're driving towards the same end, and that is a gross intolerance to Christians.
Chris, we're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. I read your speech. It was outstanding. We'll get you back on again real soon. Again, that was Congressman Chris Smith of the 4th Congressional District of New Jersey. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. And these are one of the occasions I would encourage you, if you have the time, or maybe I should say make the time, to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over to Chris Smith's website, and send him a note and just say thank you for defending the rights of the defenseless and speaking up on behalf of religious freedom. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back in our final segment, we're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton, who in a Democratic debate earlier this week was dismissive of the idea that she might be indicted for the improper handling of classified material. We're going to talk with Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis on that. Don't go away. We're back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Glad to have you along. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, tonyperkins.com. On Twitter, if you want to keep up with what we're doing on a daily basis, it's at T. Perkins. All right, earlier this week, Univision hosted a Democratic debate between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Now, former Secretary of State Clinton was asked about the ongoing investigation into her bathroom email server and the improper handling of classified material. Univision moderator Jorge Ramos asked if she would step down if indicted. Listen to her response.
I did not send or receive any emails marked classified at the time. What you're talking about is retroactive classification.
If you get indicted, would you drop out?
Oh, for goodness, that is not going to happen. I'm not even answering that question.
Joining me now is Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Ron, can the former Secretary of State that easily sidestep this issue? Is this a non-issue, or is it really an issue with some teeth that's gaining traction?
Well, it's an issue. I mean, first of all, this notion of whether things are marked classified or not, that is not a valid defense. I mean, if I was in a top secret skiff, we call them, and there were signals intelligence or human intelligence that were being discussed or reviewed, I could not take that and put it in an unclassified email, even if it wasn't marked, because you know just by the nature of the information that it needs to be protected. But we also know just from some of the emails that have been released, and remember, she destroyed about 30,000 emails. The FBI may be able to get those off the server, but those are not even of those ones that she destroyed. Of the ones she didn't destroy that have been released, we know that there's at least one where she instructed one of her aides to remove the classification markings and send it non-paper. And so, did she mean that she just wanted to get the information and that if you didn't have classified markings that somehow that may escape scrutiny? We don't know. But, the notion that somehow she was just an innocent bystander in all this is refuted by the fact.
Congressman, I would think as Secretary of State dealing with some of the highest level of classified issues and material, that she would know when she sees something as to whether or not it's of a classified nature, whether or not that word actually appears on the document.
Without question. I mean, there's just certain things. If we are, there was the news about like Merkel's cell phone conversations and some of these things. I mean, any of that stuff, you just know is top secret. Anything involving human intelligence sources, top secret, just by definition. And again, whether this stuff is being originated with her or with her aides or with other meetings she's in, you can stamp it or not stamp it. The information, it is what it is. And I think it's going to be tough for her to escape that. And incidentally, the FBI is doing, from all intents, a pretty thorough investigation. Now, when she says it's not going to happen to get indicted, I mean, it may be the case that Loretta Lynch would not indict her under any circumstances. But I think if there's a live case that the FBI produces, and if we can point to other people who have been prosecuted for doing the same or less, I think it's going to be a big cloud that hangs over her entire candidacy. So obviously, if she's indicted, that's bad for her. But if she's not, because she's a Democratic bigwig, in some ways, I think that'll be equally damaging.
Well, Congressman, what do you think the odds are that this Department of Justice, yes, they are doing an investigation, they are looking into it. I mean, she's not been identified as a target. She's said that publicly. But there, we do know that the investigation is ongoing. Given the level of information we know, what do you think the probability is that the Justice Department will act upon that?
Well, I think the probability is probably pretty high that the FBI will present a case that is actionable in some way or another. Because if you look at the statute, it doesn't even require intent. When you mishandle classified information, when national security secrets are revealed, even if it's grossly negligent, you can still be criminally prosecuted. And I think in her case, you do have intent because she made the conscious decision to set up this rogue server simply for the protection of her own political hide, because she didn't want to be subject to FOIA. She didn't want to be subject to congressional oversight. And so she was willing to risk the integrity of her communications and our nation's secrets in order to protect her own hide. So I think that is even sufficient for intent. So the case will be there. If this were somebody who was an enemy of the administration, like a Dinesh D'Souza, who they indicted for a small campaign finance violation, then yes, I would predict she would be indicted. But because it is a Democratic bigwig, leading candidate for president, I think it's probably unlikely that they would indict her.
Again, that was Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis talking about Hillary Clinton and her email problem. All right, folks, out of time for this weekend. Again, I encourage you to visit the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about this weekend's program. You can also find resources that will help you, especially as you head to the polls this Tuesday. Our voter guide, download it, use it, pass it out, but make good use of it, and be sure and vote your biblical values this Tuesday. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.